Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on every evening about 8 o'clock, sometimes 6:30, sometimes 9:30, sometimes 11. You will get an honest intellectual perspective on this show, honest discernment, truth and facts, no media lies, no media falsehoods, no media propaganda, only the facts and the truth. I'm going to talk about, briefly, about St. Paul, who is the author of many, many letters which he wrote to churches which he founded. And St. Paul is quite a great theologian and quite a great thinker. He deserves a great deal of attention in our modern world, or on the part of anybody, really, because he's such a profound and deep thinker in every way. So I'm going to give a little bit of my background, then I'm going to go into this little lecture about St. Paul, and possibly continue it tomorrow. Now, this is a politically incorrect show. Namely, we don't go in for media hype, media falsehoods, media propaganda, or anything like that, or political rhetoric. We try to get at the facts and the truth by critical thinking in every way. That is the aim of this show, getting the truth and getting the facts and casting aside the curtains of darkness that hide us from the facts and truth. Next, I'm a Christian, and I adhere to the Christian faith in terms of the full authority of Scripture from Genesis to Revelation. I also adhere to the creeds of the Church, the Athanasian Apostles and Nicene Creed. And if I read a book, I'm going to read John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. I'm going to read C.S. Lewis. I'm going to read T.S. Eliot. I'm going to read St. Augustine. I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to read St. Paul, which I'm going to talk about tonight, and Bonhoeffer and Calvin and Luther and all the great Christian thinkers, past and present. These are the people that feed my mind, that I'm concerned with, that I wish to know and commune with intellectually. I have a political position, a basically conservative political position, but I part ways in following the directions of Christ and his concern for the poor and underclass people. Many so-called sinners, ritual law, and moral sinners were his followers. He chose as his disciples tradesmen, whether disciples or call them disciples or tax collectors. He chose as his people that he wished to associate with so-called sinners and the people of the underclass in his society. It was said of him, who is this, can anything come out of Nazareth? It was said of him, who is this man that eats with publicans and sinners? Jesus himself took on poverty. He came down from heaven and became a human being and took on the limitations of humanity. And he himself was poor and had few or none political possessions. Next, I want to talk about that I run two radio shows, a podcast show and a Blog Talk radio show. And these shows have many, many visitors from persons all over the world. I know people from Saudi Arabia have visited in the Blog Talk show, and as well as many, many people from Iran and Iraq, and Arab countries have visited both of these shows. I welcome all religions in this show. I do not exclude any group of people, anybody at all. To me, they all represent the face and love of Christ in every way, and they represent the love of Jesus as they present themselves. I love my Islamic brothers and sisters. I love my Hindu brothers and sisters. I love deeply my Shinto brothers and sisters. I love them all as the face and love of Christ. He died for all. He cast down his life for all humanity. Islam, Shinto, Buddhists, whoever they are, he died for them. And therefore, they have great value. And I do not wish to exclude them from my compass. And actually, better put, I would wish to dialogue with them and know them better and understand their faith so that they could hear my faith and what I think about things. Dialoguing is very important. Intellectual interchange is very important. It's critical. Okay. before we can get anywhere in life, we have to understand other points of view and grasp them and understand them and see them as they are, as the face and love of Christ, everybody. Next, I'm an author. I've written 10 books, Christian books and legal books. I've written essays in the Christian worldview, essays in faith, culture, politics, and philosophy, a book on the parables, all 41 parables. Parables are very, very great expositions of God's thought in Christ. I read them constantly. They deserve great attention, and they're quite deep and profound, and I read them regularly. The words of Christ cannot be read more often than they are read. I've also written a book on the Psalms recently, all 150 Psalms, and this book is a... The Psalms, to me, are the John Donne, the English poet and Anglican pastor, said of the Psalms, they were the manna of the church. They're great. They're Jewish lyric poetry. They're Hebrew lyric poetry. I read them in seminary. Not all of them, but a number of them. And I read memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm when I was in Sunday school, young person. The Psalms have been part of my life, and they are very great. Lyric poetry, as Hebrew lyric poetry, and as the thought of God as he's communicated to himself in the Psalms. They're very great because their thinking is very great, and you cannot read them more than I have read them. Those who have not read the Psalms have missed out significantly. They have lost their compass in terms of thinking. The Psalms are very great. They're very great thinking of God and Christ, and they're very beautiful lyric poetry in Hebrew, which I read in seminary. And I challenge you, as I said before, I challenge you to say which would you tire of more, an English translation of the Psalms or an English translation of Tolstoy. I think you'd tire of Tolstoy, and you would never tire of the Psalms. One never tires of the Psalms because of their very intrinsic greatness. I'm writing other books, four blog books of my blogs, political, religious, philosophical, and theological. I'm writing four blog books. I'm writing a book on the miracles in the Bible. I haven't completed it. I've written part of it. I'm writing another law book I've written two law books, Select Legal Topics, Volumes 1 and 2. I'm writing a law book on criminal hearings in criminal law, and I've completed part of that, the first chapter, and will be working on that for some years in the future. I'm going to commence work on an exposition of the Book of Job. Job was an Edomite. He wasn't Jewish. He made it into the Hebrew canon, but it is a very great piece of work in which God demonstrates the trials and tribulations he put on Job in his life. I've written other books in New York Jurisprudence. I wrote the section on criminal law hearings. I wrote a chapter on evidence in Res Gestae, in Bender's Consolidated Evidence. I wrote a chapter on paternity in New York Family Law and Practice. These have sold well. And I've written three law review articles, the Syracuse Law Review, in which the United States Supreme Court and the State Department bought this article. It's a review of criminal procedure in the state of New York. I've written two academicus articles of an Albanian scientific journal on the United States educational system and on sexual orientation discrimination. I abhor any kind of discrimination, dislike it, and I want no hate in my life against anyone or any group. So that's about where I'm coming from tonight. And I'm going to talk about St. Paul. Now, a lot of people have a problem with St. Paul. They say, just give me a minute to say what they say. They say he is anti-woman, just like people say those who are against abortion are anti-woman. But it's not so. St. Paul was not anti-woman. He may have had cultural prejudices about women in the church, but that was the extent of it. And the fact of the matter is that he was quite a great man. And a few months ago, I was watching television, and I put on a panel discussion about St. Paul and the New Testament. The panel consisted of biblical scholars, mostly representing the more liberal Protestant denominations, which often, I think, reject the historicity of the Bible schools and refer to them as myths. I think they do. The panel in this television show consisted of biblical scholars representing the more liberal Protestant denominations, which often reject the historicity of the Bible stories and refer to them as myths. I'm not going to argue with that point, although I disagree with it, but I'd like to talk about one particular comment of one of the scholars in the panel. In Acts chapter 9, it is related that Saul, who formerly had been persecuting the new-founded church and Christians, went to the high priest and asked for letters to the synagogues at Damascus to apprehend Christians. It is related in chapter 9 that as Saul journeyed, a light from heaven flashed about him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, why do you persecute me?" Saul, as related to have said, "Who are you, Lord?" And the voice that he heard is supposed to have said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do." So this story and act is very, very significant. Saul was persecuting the newly founded Christian church and went to the high priest and asked for letters to the synagogues of Damascus to arrest Christians. And it said, as he journeyed, a light from heaven flashed about him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying, "Saul, why do you persecute me?" And Saul is related to have said, "Who are you, Lord?" And the voice that he heard is supposed to have said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." The men who were traveling with Saul were said to have been speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no one. And Saul is said to have risen to the ground, and when he opened his eyes, was blind and could see nothing. And they led him by the hand into Damascus. And it says, for 3 days Saul was without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Thereafter it is related that when Ananias is said to have told Saul, "Jesus appeared to you on the road by which you came and has sent me so that you can regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit." At this point it is related that the scales fell from Saul's eyes and he regained his sight. So what happened was Saul was confronted by the risen Christ as a light from heaven. And he fell to the ground, and the voice said to him, "Saul, why do you persecute me?" And Saul is related to have said, "Who are you, Lord?" And the voice that he heard is supposed to have said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, you'll be told what you have to do." And the men who were traveling with Saul were speechless, hearing a voice but seeing no one. And Saul is said to have risen to the ground, and when he opened his eyes, could see nothing. He was blind. And they led him by the hand into Damascus, and for 3 days Saul was without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Therefore, it is related that Ananias is said to have told Saul, "Jesus appeared to you on the road by which you came and has sent me so that you regain your sight." At that point, it is said that Saul regained his sight. Now, some people have said that Paul's experience of the road to Damascus and his vision resulted from, they say, in an interpretation, a modernist interpretation of this event, rather than discussing the miraculous character of it, that Paul's experience of the road to Damascus and his vision was a situation where he had epilepsy or a mental illness. First of all, there is no factual evidence that opinion is true, that he was mentally ill. I think he had a miraculous vision, but more important, I think it's erroneous and wrong. Anyone who has read Paul's letters, which are in the canon of the New Testament, can see that they reveal an outstanding thinker. Paul wrote letters to the church in Rome, in Corinth, in Galatia, in Philippi, in Thessalonica, and Ephesus. There are individual letters to a runaway slave named Philemon, and to two individuals, Timothy and Titus. These letters, I have read them in Greek, and these letters, both to the individuals and to the churches, are most profound in their presentation and thought, and they are hardly the work of an insane person or an epileptic, which is what the modernist people would like to say about Paul, that he was crazy, that he was an epileptic. They had something wrong with him. What is this person seeing visions and having being blinded? But on the other hand, to enter the biblical worldview, you have to suspend your natural inclinations and understand miracles and the supernatural, which are governing the Christian perspective. These letters of Paul have convinced people for 2,000 years of all races and background to become Christians. Paul made many missionaries throughout Asia Minor and Greece. He went to Greece, Corinth, Antioch, and Asia Minor, as well as Ephesus. He's also represented as going to Jerusalem, Miletus, and Caesarea. In fact, St. Paul traveled throughout almost the entire known Greco-Roman world as an evangelist. It begs the question for me to say that a person who could move world history, as did St. Paul, and continues to move history, was mentally handicapped or epileptic. This man, this genius, was able to move people constantly to Christ and to Christianity on a constant basis. Anybody who can do that is not mentally handicapped or an epileptic. I'm not convinced that a person of such intellectual depth as revealed in these letters and of such commitment to an idea person was insane. The idea of his being mentally illness or epileptic or insane is completely off base. These letters and this man move people in his thinking substantially. I would like to know, ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if he were crazy and epileptic, how could an insane man and someone who saw false vision because of a handicap have brought and continue to bring the world to its feet? His letters and thinking have brought the world and continue to bring the world to its feet. I am not convinced that a person of such intellectual depth as revealed in these letters and such commitment to an idea in person was insane. If that were the case for some 2,000 years, these writings of a purportedly insane man who saw false vision because of a handicap, they continue to bring the world to its feet. Let me make a final point. Later, Paul saw the risen Christ. If the vision that Saul, or later Paul, saw the risen Christ on the road to Damascus was a product of epilepsy and mental illness, I ask you to look at chapter 13 of Paul's letter to the Corinthian church, in which eloquently he says, "If I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I'm a noisy gong or clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, I have all faith so as to move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For our knowledge is imperfect, and our prophecy is imperfect. But when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away." He says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall understand fully, even as I have been fully understood. So faith, hope, love abide these three. The greatest is love." This man who wrote these sentences and produced this thought and who had the vision that he had on the road to Damascus was not crazy or mentally ill or an epileptic. These thoughts I have just put here, if they were the thoughts of an epileptic or mental case, these thoughts have affected and moved more people than most books that have ever been written. I'm going to talk about this again tomorrow night. I've given you the chapter in my book on St. Paul, the supposedly insane epileptic. It's found in chapter one of the book, Essays on Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy. I think St. Paul, far from being a mental case or an epileptic, was a genius and a person who had great love for Christ. What he has moved the world in his letters and in his thinking for many, many centuries. He is not an epileptic. He is not mentally handicapped. He is and was not crazy. Those who say that, they work from the perspective that anything in the Bible of miraculous or supernatural character is nonsense. That's not so. If you're going to enter into the Bible and believe what's in the Bible or understand what's in the Bible, you have to suspend your natural thoughts and enter into the miraculous, and enter into the miracles, and enter into the supernatural. And understand that Paul was not crazy, he was not an epileptic, but was a very great, great man in his thinking. If you read his letters, you will find this is an outstanding thinker in every way. And I have never regretted reading the epistles of Paul in Greek, which I read every one of them. And I continue to read them because their greatness is obvious. And Paul's greatness is completely obvious. He has moved more people in his letters and in his thinking than can be counted. And he continues, when people read his letters, to move people into Christ. This is much I have to say tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be talking about this again tomorrow night. I hope you've enjoyed the talk. Good night.